On Tech News Today, Microsoft announces massive layoffs, but who's being cut and why? Apple and Google make big improvements to their mobile wallets, and a former dictator is suing a game company. We'll tell you all about it. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, July 17th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. With me, of course, is Jason Howell behind the controls.
Hello.
Controlling all. And also,
I can mute you easily if I want to, but I don't want to.
From Leo's table, I can mute you, right? And there's a secret button that mutes the TD.
Yes. There should be if there isn't.
I got to talk to Lisa about getting my own button. And also, of course, it's Thursday, so we have Elise Hugh with NPR. Welcome, Elise Hugh.
Thank you, Mike and Jason. Great to be here.
Now, you told me before we started the show that you talked to the FCC and learned big number about the number of comments they've received.
That's right. As of noon, the FCC says it has gotten more than 1 million comments. Comments have surpassed the 1 million mark on net neutrality. They have, because of technical problems, they had extended the deadline for the public to comment on this very controversial issue. That deadline is now Friday, tomorrow night at midnight. So there's still time to get your comments in about net neutrality.
All right. Well, that's great information. And, of course, we urge everyone to do that and have your voice heard. Now, one other little bit of information. The Brick House, this building where Twit houses its studios, it's hard to believe, but it's 3 years old next Wednesday. And so we're having a big party, kind of an open house. So if you can make it to Petaluma, that's a great day to do that. We're going to have simple carbohydrates, beverages, sugary products, all kinds of stuff. And you're welcome all day. Make sure that if you come, though, you get here by 10 a.m. In fact, 10 a.m. is probably around a good time to get here, a little before 10, because you don't want to miss this show. We love an audience here, as long as you don't throw things at me. You can throw them at Jason, because he doesn't mind, but please don't throw things at me. But do come in and celebrate with us. It's kind of going to be a crazy party all day long. So we welcome you to do that. Well, July 23rd. Thank you. Yeah, that's the date. It's next Wednesday, July 23rd.
Tickets at twit.tv. Send your emails there if you're interested, says Jeff Needles.
Really? They're tickets?
Well, we have a tickets email account, so might as well use it for this, too.
Okay, well, there you go. Even I'm learning something already on the show. What a show. Let's jump right into the news. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella today announced plans to cut 18,000 jobs, the biggest layoff in the company's history. Microsoft also announced the end of the Nokia X, Asha, and Series 40 lines and the end of Microsoft's short experiment in the Android handset business. With us is Mary Jo Foley, who's a columnist for ZDNet and a host on Twit's Windows Weekly show. Welcome, Mary Jo.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. And Roger Chang is the executive editor for CNET News. Welcome to you, Roger.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, Mary Jo, much of this, obviously, is to get rid of some overlap with the Nokia acquisition. That's to be expected, but where else are cuts being made in the company?
So Microsoft's not really giving a lot of public details about where the other cuts are coming from, but they've told us a couple things. They've told us that about 1,300 or so of the jobs being cut are in the Seattle area. And I've heard from people who I know who are close to Microsoft that they're basically almost every part of the company is being cut, at least to some degree. So even legal's getting cuts. I mean, it's like nobody's immune from these cuts. It's not just about phone. It's not just about Xbox. It's really something going across the whole span.
And Mary Jo, how does this reflect kind of a larger strategy under Satya Nadella, the new CEO?
So he's been very clear about wanting to pivot Microsoft and remake them as a mobile first, cloud first, and also a productivity and platforms company. And he also has been very clear about saying, I want to be in consumer and enterprise both. I don't want to just kind of cut the company up, because Microsoft's a really big believer in the whole BYOD trend, and they feel like they have to be in all of these spaces simultaneously. That said, they really want to kind of pick and choose the spots where they feel like they can add value and have a chance to win. So that's why you see them really doubling down on things like Office, even if it means Office on platforms that are not Windows, Office on Android, Office on iPad. And with this series of cuts now, you're seeing them start to really tweak their inner organization. So they're trying to make some changes as to the way Windows and Windows Phone is structured so that they can be quicker to bringing the operating system releases to market. So they're kind of flattening out internally how they're structured there and taking away some of the kind of the siloed structure that had been put in place over the past few years that divided up dev, test, and PM. They have been very regimented, and that kind of resulted in them taking longer to bring new products to market.
There's already a lot of commentary flying around that this cut represents the cleaning up of Steve Ballmer's mess. That's one way to characterize it. Another way to characterize it is that it's a new Microsoft under a new leader, and it's a different kind of attitude about how a company should be organized or how lean a company should be. Where do you land on that spectrum of, you know, sort of blaming Ballmer or just it's a new day, that sort of thing? And also, how does this affect the management structure that Ballmer put in place recently before he was before he retired?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little oversimplified to say he's cleaning up Ballmer's mess, because if you look at some of the things he's being credited, he here, meaning Satya Nadella, he's being credited with some of the things that Ballmer himself already put in place. Office on iPad is a good example of that. That project got started under Ballmer, and Ballmer was even the one who said, you know what, let's bring this to market before the Windows version. It makes sense these days. So I think it's a little too simplistic to just say he's cleaning that up. But I do think he's trying to put his stamp, he again here being Nadella, on the new Microsoft and flesh out what they mean when they say one Microsoft. He is a guy who is very into the whole idea of experimentation, testing, using things like machine learning to make better decisions. So he's bringing all of kind of his core values to bear on Microsoft. And that's why you're seeing some of these changes happen. You're seeing him want to change the organization in ways that he thinks will make it more nimble and better suited to working in a world where Microsoft's not the dominant player it used to be. I mean, even I was just at the partner conference this past week where they talked to their resellers and they put up a slide saying, hey, you know what? We used to be 90% of the market with Windows, and now we're 14% if you look at all devices. We have 14% share. We really need to change how we're going about approaching things.
14% is a big number for Microsoft. It's also the percentage of the workforce that's being cut, coincidentally.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, now, Roger Chang, what does the termination of the Nokia X, Asha, and Series 40 lines mean for the markets that those phones serve? Is this going to be something of a shock, or is this not going to make that big of an impact?
I think the Nokia X elimination is not a huge surprise. It's, you know, it was kind of a half-baked project when it came out. There were a lot of questions about why Nokia was coming out with an Android power phone just months before being, you know, taken in by Microsoft. They weren't impressive products, and to take those resources and bring them back and focus on Windows Phone, I think, is a smart move. But the Asha line is a bigger question, because it actually was fairly successful, and it sort of meets a need that Lumia can't yet fill. At this point, by withdrawing from Asha and, you know, those cheap, super cheap $15, $20 phones, it could open the door for Android to come in and kind of scoop up some of that lower end market share. So it's a bit mixed. I think the Nokia X thing was smart, but leaving Asha means, I think, leaving some market share on the table.
Roger Chang, some analysts are already saying that this is evidence that Microsoft really isn't interested in being a handset maker. What do you think?
I think that's the case. If you look through Elop's memo and Satya's memo, I mean, they want to focus on premium devices, marquee devices that that are basically the standard bearer for Nokia Lumia Windows phones and or Microsoft Lumia Windows phones. And so by moving to that one platform, by consolidating all your resources behind that one Windows phone platform, that's how they're doing it, right? They're going to be focusing on fewer but stronger products, but under a consistent platform.
Mary Jo Foley, how do you think this layoff, this news, is going to affect the public perception of Microsoft? I mean, Wall Street seems to like it, but is this going to be perceived as that Microsoft is in decline or struggling or anything like that? Or would the public generally see this as more or less the kind of restructuring you'd expect after a big acquisition and a new CEO?
I think the public usually has very little idea about why companies do what they do. So I think they'll probably take this more kind of easy, simplistic approach and say this is Microsoft being in chaos and disarray. I mean, when you talk about cutting 14% of your workforce, it's like, wow, how did you get that bloated? You know, that's the first thing people are going to ask. I think Wall Street already is showing that they're pretty bullish about it. And they've been really after Microsoft to make these kinds of cuts for a while. They've just been saying, you know what, you guys, you're top heavy. You've got too much management. Your product line's all over the map. You really need to kind of focus on what your core is and really kind of pare down what you're doing. And I think we're going to see their stock price move because of that.
And Roger Chang, is there any... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's all yours.
Roger, I was just curious, is there any significance to this particular timing? I know layoffs typically come on Fridays, and then in this particular distance from the leadership change and the acquisition, should we read anything into the timing here?
I mean, you know, there's been a lot of things that have gone on, right? Satya's already sent out his memo, sort of talking about the change that he wants to bring to Microsoft. And then next week, he's got Microsoft's earnings. So it kind of falls in between that those two events. You know, he's going to hold a Q&A with employees tomorrow, but I think the first time he'll be able to address some of these layoffs publicly will be during the earnings conference call next week.
All right. Well, Mary Jo Foley is at blogs.zdnet.com/Microsoft, and you can follow her on Twitter at Mary Jo Foley. You can also find Mary Jo on Windows Weekly, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific with Leo Laporte and Paul Theroux. Thank you so much, Mary Jo. Finally, we got you on Tech News today. I'm so thrilled.
Long overdue. Yes. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. And Roger Chang, of course, is at cnet.com and on Twitter at Roger W. Chang. Thank you so much for joining us, Roger.
Thanks for having me. All right. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about changes to iTunes and what you can do with your iTunes things, your stuff, your account. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. You know, long ago, a couple of decades ago, everybody who had a career was associated with the company that they worked for. That was the brand that you were associated with. Nowadays, you are your own brand. And so you need to be good at developing and cultivating your personal brand. And the best way to do that, of course, is to have a really awesome website where people go and discover you, find out about you, and just go, wow, look at this website. This person is really incredible. On Squarespace, of course, one of our sponsors, you can link to your social networks, your resume, all the work you've done, your portfolio of work if you're a creative person, everything. And that gets you out there. People can find you on the search engines. And it's just a great idea if you want to have a successful career. You need to cultivate your personal brand. And Squarespace, of course, is the place to do it. They have 25 beautiful templates. You start with those templates, and then you just go in there and use their easy-to-use tools to customize so that your website is unique on all the internet. And you can also use a logo creator tool. If you need a logo, your brand may need a logo, or if you need a logo for your business or whatever it is you're doing, your project, any use for a logo, you can use the logo creator tool, which helps you, even as a non-designer, build a beautifully designed logo. It's really quite a remarkable thing, and you can check it out at blog.squarespace.com. They've got a really cool video in there that you can check out. So make the switch and bring your blog, if you've got one, over to Squarespace. You can just simply import them from WordPress, Blogger, Tumblr, and other sites. Super easy to do, and your readers will thank you. And, of course, you can bring in your custom domain if you've got that as well. E-commerce is supported at all subscription plan levels. So if you need to raise money for your nonprofit, if you need to sell things on the site, you can do that very easily on your personal website. It starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And the customer service, of course, is excellent. I've used it once or twice and was blown away, frankly, by how good it was and how knowledgeable the people were and how quickly they got back to me. So, you know, what are you waiting for? Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT. That'll get you 10% off the price and it'll let you show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Well, Elise, what is going on at Apple?
Well, we talked about Microsoft. Got to switch over to Apple now. At Apple, there's soon you can live in a world without physical iTunes gift cards. Not at least if you get iTunes Pass. Apple has debuted its new iTunes Pass service in the U.S. and the U.K. this week after first rolling it out in Japanese iTunes stores. It lets users buy iTunes store credit directly without the need for that physical card and having to scratch things out or scratch the code off with a quarter. Joining us to talk about it is Alex Heath. He's a writer at Cult of Mac and on Twitter at Alex E. Heath. Alex, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So kind of just tell us the practical effect here. How do you actually use iTunes Pass?
Sure. It's kind of an interesting thing. On your iPhone, you can create this iTunes Pass through the iTunes Store in the App Store, and it adds it as a pass to Passbook, which a lot of people may have forgotten that Passbook actually exists. But it's a way to store gift cards and loyalty IDs in iOS. And it's been kind of underutilized, so it's interesting to see Apple finally do something with it. But anyway, you create an iTunes Pass and Passbook with a barcode that then when you go into the Apple Store, a specialist can reload it with any amount you want that's then credited to your iTunes account.
Now, does this require some sort of buy-in by other retailers, and can it be used by other retail? Like, how does this? Like, what's the sort of range with which you can use this feature?
Well, it's interesting because it really doesn't have a range right now beyond the iTunes Store, which I mean is certainly huge. I mean, Apple has 800 million iTunes Store customers with credit cards on file, and so that's certainly huge. And it immediately it gets rid of the need for physical gift cards, but even then. It seems like more of a sign of what's to come. At least I'm hoping so. It looks like this could be the beginning of laying the groundwork for, as you already said, a paperless, maybe walletless future of mobile payments. I mean, kind of in the way that you can pay with PayPal at Home Depot. I could see this down the road being where, and we know this because the Wall Street Journal and other publications have reported that Apple is working on a mobile payment solution. So perhaps this is a sign of a future where you can pay with your iTunes account anywhere you go by either scanning a barcode or maybe down the road using iBeacons or NFC or what have you. Somebody could just send a notification to your phone with what you checked out. You can review it on your phone and then confirm it without even having to exchange anything. So it's got some interesting possibilities. Right now, it's pretty limited.
And if this is a harbinger of things to come, I have to ask because this comes up not just with Apple, but all sorts of other companies who have been trying to roll out easier ways to pay. Why has it taken so long to go to a mobile payment system just generally? What has been the roadblock? Because it seems like we're in 2014. People were talking about this at least 10 years ago. What's taken so long?
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's a lot of players in the space. I mean, you've got Square, PayPal, Apple, others, and everyone's kind of got their own approach right now. And Apple seems to be, well, Apple, and they are usually in just about any market, the slowest mover, but then they generally tend to do it the right way. And I'm not really sure. I haven't looked into the world of mobile payments as a whole that much. But it seems clear that we're starting to get to a point where people are more comfortable paying with their mobile devices. I think Square has shown that. It seems like everywhere I go now, people are accepting Square and people have iPads for cash registers. So it seems like we're definitely reaching that threshold where perhaps Apple will be able to do something like this. And we know that Touch ID, the reason that Apple made Touch ID was one of the key reasons was that they had mobile payments in mind for it. It's something that Tim Cook has said publicly. So Apple has the credit cards on file. They have the authentication. with Touch ID. And I think with iBeacons more recently, they could have a very interesting networking effect with retailers that could hopefully provide a pretty seamless experience that no one else has been able to match.
Absolutely. And at least you, that your question, I think, is the big, big question. And, you know, what is taking them so long? Alex, you and I have both written on this topic extensively over the last year or two on Cult of Mac. It's just very clear. It seems really obvious to me that Apple is going to go huge with mobile wallets and mobile commerce. And it's like, you know, what is taking them so long? But when they do, they're going to be a huge powerhouse. And I'm predicting that eventually that'll be a massive part of their revenue and profits, because they just have so much potential there. Alex Heath is at cultofmac.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex E. Heath. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex.
Thanks.
All right. Well, Google also had a big change to their mobile wallet system. They added support for gift cards and other new features to Google Wallet. John Fingus wrote about the news for Engadget, and he joins us now. Welcome, John.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. Now, how does Google's gift card support work exactly?
Okay, well, basically what you do is, like, let's say somebody's kind to you and gives you a gift card. Well, basically you can either take a photo of it or type the info in, and then after that, basically that card sits in the app. So you can at least, you know, like, give the barcode to somebody, for example. And with certain cards, like, say, well, certain stores, rather, like AMC, Lululemon, Best Buy, places like that, you can actually, it'll actually tell you what your balance is. So if you didn't spend all the card in one shot, you can find out, oh, I've got $5 left, so I can use it for like a cappuccino or something like that. So it actually looks pretty straightforward and pretty clever.
So fewer physical gift cards, not only offered by Google, but also Apple. Now Google has apparently also added payment support to Gmail. Can you tell us how that works?
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, I think either through the app or Gmail, you can basically say, you know, just give somebody, you can, you can ask for payments for starters. Like, so if you've got a friend who owes you money, you can say, yo, give me some cash. But alternately, if you want, you can now actually send your own payments through a debit card, for example. So it's pretty straightforward again. So it's actually kind of nice, because it's like a great way to get around the usual hassles of, like, say, oh, let me cut you a check, or you can do money transfers, of course, like lots of banks will do that. But it's like just being able to do all this kind of thing from one app, that's kind of nice.
What else did Google announce around their Google Wallet product?
Okay, well, yeah, the gift cards and the ability to send and receive money easily are the main things. But they also have, I suppose really the main thing besides that is Spanish language support. So, I mean, obviously there are a lot of Spanish speaking Americans. So, like, being able to actually, you know, handle everything in Google Wallet language is appreciated. So it's pretty straightforward.
Absolutely. Well, John Fingus is at Engadget.com, and you can follow him on John Fingus. John is spelled J-O-N. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
You're very welcome. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. Well, speaking of Google, Elise, they got a big earnings call coming up today.
That's right. Just a little bit more Google news. It will announce its second quarter earnings this afternoon. The tech giant is expected to reveal some new details about its advertising business on sites like Google.com and its YouTube.com site. So it's kind of opening up the kimono a bit on some numbers that we haven't previously seen before. That's expected coming up this afternoon.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Google is such an interesting company to cover, because they just generate so much news. There's so much of the activity that they do that's newsworthy. They always have so many projects in the works. They always have so much information. They're always making all these different changes. And, you know, ultimately, they're an advertising company. I mean, they get almost all of their revenue from advertising. Advertising is a very fickle and unpredictable source of revenue and profits. And so you always kind of like bite your fingernails whenever they have an earnings call. But I think we're expecting healthy growth and probably a positive call. That's my guess, and I think a lot of people are predicting that as well. Are there any potential gotchas, you think, Elise Hugh, that could come out that may surprise everyone or be particularly negative?
Well, investors are interested in what Google's been able to make, what sort of profits they've been able to turn on app sales in their stores. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't see a gotcha coming per se, but we're just going to get clearer numbers, a better breakdown than the company's been previously willing to reveal on those ad sales. So it's just something to watch later this afternoon.
Okay, great. Well, in just a sec, we have a follow-up and one other story as well. But first, I want to tell you about Personal Capital, our other sponsor for this show. Personal Capital is a fantastic service. It's free, and they will save you a lot of money right away, and I'll tell you how they're going to do that. But most importantly, I think they help you get your financial life in order. We have to manage our money to make sure that we have enough of it later on in life, and to manage it so that we deal with our debt and we make good investment decisions. It's all very, very important. But how do you do it? One way to go is to hire somebody. But if you hired somebody to help you with your money, you're probably paying too much. And Personal Capital will show you exactly how much too much you're paying. And they'll show you how to reduce those costs. The other way is that you really can't get a good handle on where your money is. It's all in these different accounts. What does it mean? Where is it going? How is it changing? Personal Capital puts it all together in simple, easy-to-understand graphs and charts that allow you to have an intuitive understanding of your money. And one of the most exciting things that happened in technology recently is the launch of Android Wear, and Personal Capital is all over it. They've announced the integration of their award-winning Android app with Android Wear. Now, you can just download the regular Android app from Google Play, and the watch support is built in. The watch app seamlessly integrates with Personal Capital on Android devices and provides you with relevant and timely updates on your finances. It's really cool to get that kind of information on your wristwatch, alerts, things you need to know about. So that's a very powerful new technology, and it's really cool to see them as one of the first couple of dozen apps to exist for Android Wear. So why wait? Signing up takes a minute and it pays big dividends. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to help you make better investment decisions right away. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Personal Capital is free and it's a smart way to grow your money. Just go to personalcapital.com/TNT. That's personalcapital.com/TNT. We told you last week that after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled against Aereo, the company's CEO sent a letter to a U.S. district court in New York saying, hey, because the court smacked us down by calling us a cable company, the company's entitled to be licensed as a cable company. Well, CNBC is reporting this morning that U.S. copyright officials have told Aereo they do not consider Aereo a cable company under the terms of the copyright law.
Aww.
Nice try, Aereo.
I thought it was a clever attempt to make a workaround there, so that's a bummer.
Yeah, I thought it was clever. They're very creative, if nothing else, but so far it's not working very well for them.
Nope.
Well, at least even drug-dealing dictators have reputations to protect, don't they?
Yeah, I know you weren't expecting this, listeners and viewers, but we have a little news out of Panama. former Panama dictator Manuel Noriega is actually suing the makers of Call of Duty. His name, Noriega's name and image, is a, I guess, make for a character in Activision Publishing's Call of Duty Black Ops 2. And so he's suing the company for unlawfully using his image for monetary gain. Noriega, the famous strongman, was convicted in the U.S. of dealing drugs in 1992, and he has already served 15 years in the U.S., currently serving a 20-year sentence in Panama. And I guess while he's in jail for murder and money laundering, he has time to sue about his likeness being used in Call of Duty. I guess he's worried it'll damage his reputation.
I guess so. And, I'm really curious. What I really want to know out of this story is, has he played the game? I mean, he's in prison. Is there anything else to do besides play Xbox? Would they even let him do that?
Is the Noriega character like Noriega in real life? He's the only one who can really tell us.
He's playing. He's like, I would never do this. Anyways, whatever.
That's right. This isn't murder or laundering. I've never run around with a shotgun. No, that's not me at all. Well, it's a fun story, and Noriega's always been an interesting character in the news. Well, Elise Hugh, that is the tech news today. Now, you mentioned the Google report, the earnings coming up. IBM also has earnings coming up, so we'll be watching both of those. And I want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today every Thursday. It's so awesome when you're here.
Always great to be here. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS, or many other options. Choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. And please follow us on Twitter, Tech News Today TV, and join our Google Plus community and circle our page. All you have to do is just search Google Plus for Tech News Today, and you'll find us everywhere we are. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send us email at tnt@twit.tv or voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name's Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.